Today is Friday, February 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the COVID-19 outbreak has infected more than 75,000 people in 27 countries, and around 2,200 have died. In addition,
South Korea has ratcheted up its fight against the coronavirus after the city of Daegu became the latest hotspot this week.
Plus, a 7-day reduction in violence in Afghanistan begins tonight, and we take a look at the implications of using technology for sinister means. Those stories and more are next. World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus announced that the total number of confirmed cases attributed to the coronavirus COVID-19 is approaching 76,000 cases in China.
As of 6 a.m. Geneva time this morning, China has reported a total of 75,567 cases of COVID-19 to WHO, including 2,239 deaths. In the past 24 hours, China has reported 892 new confirmed cases and 118 deaths. The significant decline in new confirmed cases is partly due to another change in the way China reports numbers. As you know, last week, China started reporting clinically diagnosed cases in addition to laboratory confirmed cases. They have now switched back to reporting only suspected and lab confirmed cases. This may indicate because the health system in Wuhan have regained the ability to test all suspected cases. As a result, some cases that had been clinically confirmed have now been subtracted from the total because they have tested negative. Although the number of cases in Hubei province continues declining, we're concerned about an increase in the number of cases in Shandong province, and we're seeking more information about that. Outside China, there are now 1,152 cases in 26 countries and 8 deaths. Although the total number of cases outside China remains relatively small, we're concerned about the number of cases with no clear epidemiological link, such as travel history to China or contact with a confirmed case. Apart from the Diamond Princess cruise ship, the Republic of Korea now has the most cases outside China. And we're working closely with the government to fully understand the transmission dynamics that led to this increase. We're also concerned about the increase in cases in the Islamic Republic of Iran, where there are now 18 cases and 4 deaths in just the past 2 days. WHO has supplied testing kits and will continue to provide further support. Our concern continues to be the potential for COVID-19 to spread in countries with weaker health systems.
That was World Health Organization Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Tomorrow, Dr. Tedros will address an emergency meeting of the African health officials. It's a joint session with the African Union and African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In addition, two Australians evacuated from the Diamond Princess cruise ship in Japan have tested positive for the new coronavirus after being flown home. Phil Mercer reports authorities in Canberra have also extended a ban for another week for foreign travelers arriving from mainland China, where the virus was first reported.
170 Australians were flown home after more than 2 weeks of stress and frustration on board the Diamond Princess cruise ship docked in Yokohama, Japan. Two have tested positive for the COVID-19 coronavirus. Officials are warning that more infections could emerge within the group over the next few days. Dr. Diane Stevens from the National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre says the two patients will be sent to hospitals near their homes.
Those people remain well and mildly ill with cold-like symptoms, and they do not necessarily need to be in the hospital system, but more than likely will enter the hospital system in their home states while they manage the COVID-19 quarantine and isolation procedures.
The cruise ship passengers are being held in quarantine at a former workers' camp near Darwin in Australia's Northern Territory. It's also accommodating a plane load of Australian evacuees from Wuhan, China, where the disease was first reported. Their two-week quarantine period comes to an end over the weekend. Australia now has 17 confirmed cases of the disease, although more than 45 of its citizens remain on the Diamond Princess in Japan after contracting the virus while on the cruise ship. It has the largest cluster of confirmed cases outside of China. Australia hadn't had a case of coronavirus since February 1, when it barred entry to those arriving directly from mainland China. The restrictions have been extended until the end of the month. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Israel and Lebanon also announced confirmed cases of the COVID-19 as well. These became the fourth and fifth Middle Eastern nations with confirmed cases. Local media reports that the Israeli patient recently returned from Japan and was a passenger on board the Diamond Princess cruise ship, while the one in Lebanon was recently in Iran. Afghan international and Taliban forces will observe a seven-day period of reduced violence in Afghanistan beginning at 19:30 UTC Friday, or midnight local time. The agreement was struck during protracted negotiations between the United States and the Taliban representatives that began in Qatar in 2018 and could lead to a withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan. For more, I spoke with VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain, who's traveling with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and is currently in Oman.
Yes, we were on a plane, the traveling press, with the secretary from Riyadh to Oman, and were given a written statement that the U.S. and the Taliban have reached an agreement, and that the reduction in violence, seven-day period, is set to begin this evening, Afghanistan time, and that if it is implemented successfully, then there's going to be a signing to take place on February the 29th in Doha with the U.S. Special Envoy, Zalmay Khalilzad.
This is being referred to as a reduction in violence. This is not a ceasefire, correct?
Yes, that is correct. See, there's been some confusion with the word truce and the word ceasefire, but you're correct. Reduction in violence is what they're saying. And then Secretary Pompeo put out a statement saying that this is an important step on a long road to peace, and he called on all Afghans to seize this opportunity.
What are the criteria for the reduction in violence to be considered successful so the United States and the Taliban can sign that agreement next week on the 29th?
I have not gotten new information on that today, but as you know, a senior State Department official had said in Munich that there are very, very specific provisions laid out, and among them are no suicide bombings, no roadside bombings, no rocket attacks. So there are specific provisions, although I think there are some allowances in the case of that the attacks that were not actually carried out by the Taliban.
That was VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain, who is currently traveling with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Iranians began voting Friday in a parliamentary election likely to help hardline loyalists of Supreme Leader tighten their grip on power as the country faces mounting U.S. pressure over its nuclear program and growing discontent at home. Reuters' Emer McCarthy has those details.
Millions of Iranians headed to the polls on Friday in a parliamentary election that looks likely to help hardline loyalists of the Supreme Leader tighten their grip on power. Thousands of potential candidates were disqualified in favour of the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's allies. Voting in Tehran, the Ayatollah said that casting a ballot is a religious duty.
Voting is a religious duty, which we have said in the past. And the truth is that elections guarantee the national interests of Iran. Anyone who believes in the national interests of this country will participate in the voting. My advice is that first, everyone move with effort and come with their own opinions formed to vote, and to do this early. We must advise this, meaning do not leave this to the last minute, but to vote early in the day.
Parliament's power is limited and the vote is not expected to influence the country's increasingly strained relationship with the United States or foreign policy. Washington's 2018 withdrawal from Iran's nuclear deal with world powers and its reimposition of sanctions have hit Iran's economy hard and led to growing discontent. With 58 million Iranians eligible to vote, a big turnout would signal to Washington that Iran is unbowed by sanctions and the killing of military commander Qasem Soleimani back in January.
That was Reuters reporter Emer McCarthy. And still to come,
we're entering an era in which our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time.
And you're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study that was presented at the American Geophysical Union's recent Ocean Sciences Meeting 2020 projects that between 70 to 90% of Earth's coral reefs will disappear over the next 20 years. The study goes on to suggest that factors like rising sea surface temperatures and acidic waters could destroy nearly all existing coral reef habitats by the end of the 21st century. The study authors also mapped areas of the ocean that they consider suitable for coral restoration efforts over the coming years. Renee Setter from the University of Hawaii Manoa, who presented the new findings, says that the few sites possible for coral restoration by 2100 include only small parts of Baja California and the Red Sea. She adds that even these locations aren't ideal coral reef locations because of their nearness to rivers. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. After this week's Democrat Party debate, the southwestern state of Nevada will not head to the polls, but to locations for caucusing and debate who the party's nominee in November's general election should be to take on incumbent Republican President Donald Trump. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti is in the state and joins us now for a preview of the caucus. Carolyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
So the caucus is taking place tomorrow, but there are some events taking place in the state today.
Absolutely. While all the candidates are out for their last-ditch effort to get their voters to vote for them, the president is arriving here in Nevada. He is going to hold a Make America Great rally at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which is about 5 kilometers from where we are right now. It starts in 3 hours, and, you know, the line started yesterday. I heard the first man in line, and he said he got there at 3 a.m. to wait for today's rally at noon. He's a disabled veteran. He said he wanted to see Trump in person, and he's going to get his chance being the first one in line.
So he's the first person in line. That rally takes place tonight, but tomorrow is the caucus. So how exactly is that going to manifest and take place in the state of Nevada?
Well, there are 205 locations for the residents of Nevada to caucus in. Now, remember, this is the first year that they had early voting, and already 77,000 residents voted in the early voting that took place over 4 days over last weekend. But tomorrow, they start at 10 o'clock, they get registered, and then at 12 noon, the caucus begins. So what happens is each of the residents will be asked who they are voting for, and they will hold up their hand and announce who their candidate is. So they will go to a certain portion of that room and gather with other neighbors and friends and support that candidate. Now, if the candidate doesn't reach a 15% margin of the voters, they're considered unviable. So the voter can decide if they want to throw their support toward another candidate or if they just go home and say, okay, I'm done voting. It's called a realignment. when everyone throws their support to the candidate that is getting the most votes.
Now, why were people in Nevada voting last week and over the four-day period? Does this have anything to do with the previous caucus that the Democrats held in the state of Iowa?
Good question. Yes, that was certainly a debacle there when we didn't get the results for a whole week. But Nevada actually had this early voting on the schedule before Iowa, so they knew they were going to try out this plan. And it's just to get more people the ability to vote with their schedules, with their shift work. So I spoke with the chairman of the Nevada Democratic Party, William McCurdy, and he said, absolutely, we will not have this problem. He said, what happened in Iowa will not happen in Nevada, and he's confident that tomorrow will run smoothly. And, of course, we're going to be here. We're going to be at the Bellagio Casino and Hotel where all the casino workers will be voting, and we'll be there for the long haul. We're going to keep an eye on the caucus and get you the results.
We have about 30 seconds left. Really quickly here, what else are you seeing in Nevada at leading up to tomorrow's caucus?
Well, a lot of the candidates are out. They're still basking in the glow of the debate, or maybe even licking their wounds and sending off criticism from the debate. Jill Biden will be in the state today. That's the wife of former Vice President Joe Biden to campaign for him. Tom Steyer has TLC coming to give a concert for him. He wasn't even in the debate. Pete Buttigieg is asking for constituents to reach a goal of $13 million in fundraising before Super Tuesday. Elizabeth Warren announcing endorsements, and Amy Klobuchar already released her schedule for next week. Well, she's looking forward to the next event.
That's a lot. Carolyn, thank you very much for joining us from Nevada. Carolyn Pursuti is a reporter for VOA.
Thank you, Steve.
U.S. President Donald Trump replaced his head of national intelligence just a week after officials warned that Russia is meddling in U.S. elections yet again. But according to a source who spoke to Reuters news agency, Gloria So from Reuters has more.
U.S. intelligence officials warned lawmakers last week that Russia is meddling in U.S. elections yet again. That's according to a source who spoke to Reuters. A week later, U.S. President Donald Trump replaced his head of intelligence. And according to a Thursday New York Times report, the disclosure angered Trump, who berated Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire a day later. The Times sources say he rebuked McGuire for allowing his staff to appear at the briefing. Their report quoted five people familiar with the matter. That was last week. On Wednesday, Trump said he was replacing McGuire on an acting basis with Richard Grenell, a fervent Trump loyalist. Last week's classified briefing was given to the House Intelligence Committee, a group led by Democrats. Intelligence officials said Russia wanted to cast doubt on the integrity of the 2020 election, while boosting Trump's chances at a second term. The Reuters source said Trump's Republican allies were quick to challenge the idea of fresh Russian meddling. Committee Republicans and the White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The Office of the Director of National Intelligence has declined to comment. U.S. intelligence officials have concluded that Russia used fake news and cyber attacks to help Trump beat Democrat Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election. Moscow denies the allegation, and Trump himself has continued to dismiss the finding and deny any campaign collusion with Russia.
That was Reuters' Gloria So. Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane left the country, skipping a court appearance Friday, at which he was expected to be charged with murdering his estranged wife. Thabane had been due in court Friday morning over the death of Lipolelo Thabane, who was shot dead in June of 2017, 2 days before he took office for a second stint as the prime minister. Police had said on Thursday that Thabane was to be charged with Lipolelo's murder. His present wife, Masaya Thabane, who married Thabane 2 months after Lipolelo was shot dead, has already been charged with ordering the killing and is free on bail. The prime minister and his new wife both deny any role in his former wife's death. Thabane's son told Reuters News that he was in South Africa to, quote, see a doctor, end quote. And the secretary for Thabane said that he would return to Lesotho this weekend. Syrian aid groups are bracing for a larger displacement crisis as families continue to flee in search of safety and supplies that continue to remain in short supply. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more.
It's already been called a humanitarian catastrophe, and analysts say the fighting in Idlib, Syria, is growing closer to more heavily populated areas. We are here in a camp about 2 days' journey from Idlib, where families have fled. For many, it is the closest, relatively safe place to take shelter. But families here are still short on medicine, electricity, and other basic needs. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad hopes to declare victory over a multitude of warring parties in Idlib, but aid organizations say without an immediate ceasefire, the crisis will deepen. Since December, 900,000 people have been displaced and hundreds have died, including children that have frozen to death. Families here in this camp say they have been displaced 3, 4, or 5 times. Many of their friends and relatives, they say, are still trapped in the battle zone. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Manbij, Syria.
Concern over technology that brings back actresses like Princess Leia to movies is leading election officials warning about deep fake videos on social media. Matt Dibble has that story.
We're entering an era in which our enemies can make it look like anyone is saying anything at any point in time. Moving forward,
since 2018, when actor Jordan Peele put words in the mouth of a simulated Barack Obama, the line between real and fake has only become blurrier. Deepfakes use artificial intelligence to combine multiple image sources in a convincing illusion. The rapidly evolving technology is now within anyone's reach and will soon be able to fool even the most aware viewers. And this is raising concerns in a presidential election year. Here's House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff speaking last year.
So-called deep fakes that enable malicious actors to foment chaos, division, or crisis, and they have the capacity to disrupt entire campaigns, including that for the presidency.
Social media companies have released a flurry of announcements saying they will remove deep fakes designed to deceive voters. But first, they will have to find them. A digital arms race is underway to design tools to identify deepfakes. Hani Farid, a digital forensics expert at UC Berkeley, is concerned about a deepfake attack in the final days of the campaign.
And one way you can imagine doing that is 48 hours or 24 hours before election night, before a primary, releasing a damaging video of a candidate saying something that they never said, something offensive or illegal.
Farid's team is training its AI software to catch deepfakes by feeding it hours of video of each presidential candidate to learn their unique mannerisms.
We take a video and we track the face over time. So the blue box is telling me how the head is rotating in three-dimensional space. The green laser is coming out of the eyes is telling me where he's looking, and then we can use those mannerisms to distinguish a deep fake of somebody from an authentic video. Our hope is to make this technology available to mainstream journalists and then allow them, as videos start to hit, authenticate them or not.
The AI Foundation is also joining the detection effort. The San Francisco tech firm builds artificial personalities it considers beneficial.
Soon, I can go with you everywhere you go.
Like this AI Deepak Chopra, but they have a mandate to release detection tools at the same time. Vice President of Research Delip Rao explains.
We recognize the potential harm in the kinds of technologies that we are creating.
Since no single approach can spot every deepfake, the foundation is launching a platform called Reality Defender, combining detection tools from many researchers that the public will be able to use.
This is going to be our Manhattan Project to fight misinformation because it will require people from these diverse backgrounds all coming together.
Consumers of online media will also have an important role in stopping the spread of disinformation. Facebook's deepfake ban could still allow cheap fakes, like the clip of Nancy Pelosi with altered speech that went viral last year. And this concerns Hani Farid.
You, the consumer, have to start becoming more discerning in the content that you are consuming and you are amplifying.
In the future, keeping it real will be up to all of us. Matt Dibble for VOA News, Berkeley, California.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition. I'm the Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Nadia Taha, and engineer, PJ Elliott, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have an absolutely fantastic weekend.